Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
Republican lawmakers gave final approval Thursday to a resolution overturning the January mask-up order issued by Democratic Governor Tony Evers. Minutes later, Evers issued a new face mask order that will expire on March 20.
State officials say demand for COVID-19 shots far exceeds vaccine allotments so far. And the Naval Academy says the Badger statue outside the governor's office, its nose shiny from the good luck swipes of Capitol visitors, can stay. Rewind, your week in review for February 5.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Lots of drama yesterday in the Capitol on face masks. Let's take it from a chronology standpoint. Let's talk about the Assembly vote. The Assembly voted 52-42 to pass the resolution overturning, rescinding, however, killing, voiding, whatever verb you want to use, the governor's face mask order. And 52-42, and because the Assembly ended up, after much consideration of alternatives, passing the same Senate resolution that had the effect of overturning the governor's last face mask edict, and we will get into a later development very soon, so let's take a look at that. GOP leaders said the order will be overturned when they formally sign it this afternoon. GOP leaders said the state law does not permit governors to declare successive emergencies, and I think Evers has had four or five of them, without legislative approval. In other words, the governor's emergency edict order power only lasts 60 days. That order, though, was supported by dozens of medical and healthcare groups. The order that the legislature voided would have expired on March 21. The Senate plans to vote today on a bill that would clarify that canceling a face mask order wouldn't jeopardize $49 million per month in federal Social Security benefits. JR, that's not the only provision in that bill, right? Which is why Democratic Senator Erpenbach just said on a press conference that the governor's going to veto it. What else is in that bill, please?
Well, it's basically the COVID bill that would do things that, one, that Governor Evers has negotiated with Republicans, but two, do things that he doesn't likely want that to have happen. For example, there are provisions in there that would ban an employer from requiring an employee to get the COVID-19 vaccine as a condition of employment. There are provisions that would strip state and local officials of their power to limit meetings in a house of worship to deal with this pandemic. There are things in there that really are conservative kind of pet projects that Governor Evers is not interested in. The big piece of that, though, that he had kind of negotiated with Devin Lemahieu, the Senate leader, was liability protections for businesses, schools, churches, nonprofits, et cetera, against lawsuits over COVID-19. What was interesting was, remember, you know, Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker, came out of the gate right away this session with this COVID bill and pushed it with a number of conservative priorities in there. Lemahieu then, with his caucus, stripped out a number of those provisions in a deal with Governor Evers. It was amended and sent back to the Assembly. The Assembly added back in some more provisions, sent it to the Senate. Lemahieu told me, the weeks run together, but I think about 2 weeks ago now, that he thought there were pieces of that bill that were going to get vetoed, so they were going to change the bill again, or they were worried about some provisions of that bill. Then the news broke that if you overturn the public health emergency, which is the foundation for the mask mandate, you jeopardize these enhanced food stamp benefits. That's when the Senate added the provision to try and address that issue, sent it back to the Assembly, which took it up yesterday after putting the brakes on, saying, wait, we think there's some more issues here. They added a new amendment. I know this is getting kind of tedious, but this is how kind of convoluted this whole process has been. They added a new amendment that revised the language that Senate Republicans added about this whole public health emergency declarations, because the worry is, if you just overturn the public health declaration through the resolution, which is separate from the bill, you then miss out on some federal money, especially the SNAP benefits. They've addressed that in this new amendment to make sure that Governor Evers could issue a mandate that would qualify for that money without expanding his powers elsewhere in state law, and also ensuring if there are future acts of Congress that require a public health declaration to qualify for federal money, the state could qualify through an order from the governor. However, it's all for naught because Evers is likely to veto the bill because of these provisions he does not like that are in there, and also because he's issued already a new public health declaration that keeps us in line for the enhanced federal money.
Yep, and that's where we're going to go next. But before we get there, JR, follow-up question. The bill that the COVID-19 response bill that the Assembly may be voting on right now as we speak, because they were scheduled to come in at 11:15, does it also include the San Filippo provision that the general public, DHS, would have to come up with a provision to begin vaccinating the general public and not all those in Class 1B by mid-March? Is that still in the bill that the Senate's going to pass?
I thought that was just in separate legislation, so
that's
I don't
what I thought too.
Recall
okay.
It's in the bill. Another note, remember back in April, the legislature passed a bipartisan COVID bill.
Yes.
That suspended the one-week waiting period for unemployment benefits.
Yes.
That suspension ends on Sunday. Unless there is a bringing that extension back, the extension of the suspension back, we will lose out on $1.5 million in federal matching money going forward a week. The bill that lawmakers have put together, Republicans have put together, would extend that suspension through like mid-March. So if this bill doesn't, somehow, some version of the bill isn't signed into law, at some point, we're looking at losing up to $6.5 million in matching money. Does not impact the unemployment benefits you receive at home, but it's less money from the state, from the federal government, to pay for those benefits.
Okay, just to close out, before we hear from some of the debate on yesterday in the Assembly, the seven Assembly Republicans, I'm not going to name them because we're running a little tight on time. Any commonality in the reasons they join the 35 Democrats in voting to keep the mask order, JR?
No, it's a mix of suburban and rural Republicans. Jesse Rodriguez, who's a member of the finance team, so it's noteworthy because she's kind of technically part of leadership. She said she agreed that Governor Evers exceeded his powers, but she worried about the message that this would send about suspending the mask mandate at a time when there's concerns about the vaccine rollout and other things, and we're still not out of the woods yet with COVID-19.
Okay, thank you. Now, a lot of emotional debate on the Assembly floor yesterday, but let's take a look at the exchange between Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke and brand-new State Representative Democrat Francesca Hong of Madison giving her first speech. Please.
Governor has not once come to us and asked us to extend the emergency declaration that I'm aware of. I don't think he's ever asked us that. He's never asked us to pass a rule. He's never asked us to work with him on instituting any kind of requirements. He's decided that we're not worth it. And whatever his intentions are, as pure as they may be, that's not how our system of government works. I know you want to make it about masks. It's not. It is about the rule of law. It is about the fact that people that came before us felt it was important enough to put this power into statutes, but they also felt it was important enough to put a check on that power. That's what we are. We are a check. I don't know where we have lost that.
Almost 6,000 Wisconsinites have died. We'll probably pass that number this weekend. Not a single piece of legislation on the governor's desk. 6,000 dinner tables with an empty seat. Businesses shuttered. There needs to be a collective effort to protect workers and businesses. It is not on the business owners to have to enforce and tell people to wear a mask. Building consumer confidence, keeping the community safe and alive, is integral to the business community. You are not a party of fiscal conservatism here. You are the party of moral irresponsibility. This legislature has obstructed while Wisconsinites have died, stalled while folks have suffered, and now you want to take away the little protection we do have. The mask mandate is not political. It is not to be used as a weapon. It protects all of us from the coronavirus. It protects your families, your friends. You should be held accountable to them, too.
It was only about an hour after that Assembly vote, JR, that Governor Tony Evers, issued a new face mask order and a new public health emergency declaration So that happened only minutes after the assembly vote. The governor's new face mask order was the new one, scheduled to expire about the same time, March 20 or 21. The governor, in a statement, a statewide face covering requirement is necessary. Well, we're going to hear from the governor in a little bit, JR, but any surprise that the governor immediately issued it? You and I had wondered whether we'd wait until the DHS briefing today, but just the fact that he issues it right away, what did it tell you?
Well, I think that maybe the only surprise people I talked to was that, not that he issued it, but it was done within less than 2 hours, an hour of when the assembly voted. I mean, look, the bottom line is at this point, the state Supreme Court might be the only body that can step in and solve once and for all. Does a governor have these powers and end what could be a cat and mouse game going forward about public health declarations? Because remember, the court heard oral arguments in the fall about whether the governor can issue multiple declarations off of one pandemic. The governor has argued that there are unique events in this pandemic that warrant issuing a new declaration. Republicans have countered that no, the law is clear that you only get one shot at it unless you get an extension from the legislature. The court will have to rule. We're all kind of wondering why they haven't already ruled at this point. But without a ruling from the court, you can see a scenario in which Evers issues a new declaration, the legislature overturns it, he issues a new one, they overturn it, we go back and forth until the court steps in and says what the law is. So right now we're kind of in a, we'll see how the Republicans respond to this one. But I've already seen calls from Republicans to have an emergency filing with the state Supreme Court, and also the words constitutional crisis being used by Republicans to describe what's going on with this political standoff between the governor and the legislature.
Right. And Republican Senator Steve Nass immediately issued a statement. This is his words, not ours. The lawless Governor Evers. So now, immediately Governor Evers made a video. So let's listen to a little bit more than a minute of the governor justifying his new face mask edict and public health declaration. Please.
Every step of the way, our statewide strategies to contain this virus and prevent the spread have been met with lawsuits, political rhetoric, and obstruction. Unfortunately, that happened again today when Republicans and the legislature came in to vote down our state's public health emergency and end requiring face coverings in public places. And in doing so, they also put at risk nearly $50 million a month in federal funds that will go towards helping hundreds of thousands of our most vulnerable Wisconsinites have access to food assistance during this pandemic. We know that wearing face coverings can save lives and prevent death. We know it's supported by science and the CDC. And we know it's supported by more than 40 statewide organizations and the 72% of Wisconsinites who agree face coverings should be worn in public places. And most importantly, we know that as we work to get shots in the arm as quickly as we have vaccines available, no amount of vaccine in the world could bring back the lives we stand to lose if we have no statewide mitigation strategy in place to prevent the spread of COVID-19 in Wisconsin. So here's the bottom line. I haven't broken those promises I made to you during this pandemic, and I won't start today. That's why today we will be issuing a new public health emergency and order requiring face coverings in public places.
JR, I just want to wrap up this subject very quickly by saying that, as you alluded to, Senator Nass, who, by the way, chairs the Joint Committee on Rules, co-chairs, put out a press release, I'm drafting a new resolution to kill the new face mask edict. But then Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu immediately says, quote, only the Supreme Court can, and this is the majority leader's words, stop a governor bent on ignoring the law. Takeaway, JR, quickly, the Senate's done passing resolutions, right?
We'll see how this progresses, if there's a cry from the base. But again, ultimately, no matter what they do, the court's going to have to step in and resolve this issue once and for all.
Yeah, good point. Okay, and the only DHS briefing this week dealt with vaccinations. And I want to open with the deputy secretary saying we're frustrated. Although we've gone from 70,000 doses a week, I think, to 89,000, we're still, the demand so exceeds what we can put the shots in the arms. But first, let's listen to about a minute of what Julie Williams of Van Dyke, deputy secretary, said about the need for more doses in arms in Wisconsin.
You are right. We have more vaccinators. We have a more robust system. that we have vaccines. And that's why I know it sometimes feels like a broken record to hear us saying over and over again, we need more vaccine. But that is the bottom line, is we need more vaccine. Every health system calls us and says, we have more capacity than you're sending us vaccine. We're asking our vaccinators to keep their systems in place, vaccinate who they can. 100,000, 200,000 people we vaccinate now are people who will be complete and not be in line later when we get more vaccine. So it's the story of slow and steady progress right now.
JR, you and I parse these words occasionally very closely. So when Julie Williams Van Dyke said this, she was asked, can we still plan on March 1 going to the next phase, which would vaccinate teachers, child care and grocery workers, and inmates and others? She said, stay tuned. That'll depend on the flow of vaccines. There was also a report by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that the federal government is giving now 17,800 doses directly to 190 Walgreens stores, which will follow state guidelines to prioritize those 65 and over. When I went to my local Walgreens yesterday and said, can I sign up? They said, no. But the state is reporting 21% of those over 65 have received at least one shot. And just let's look at the numbers. As of yesterday, there's no DHS briefing today, 659,000 vaccinations given. Of those, 129,700 have completed, received the second dose, but 546,955 positive infections, and tragically may close in on 6,000 deaths this weekend. JR, just your take on the update on the vaccination progress.
Well, the state's actually got some good news this week in that we're doing better compared to other states than we were just a couple weeks ago. Now, you know, there are a lot of ways to look at how the rollout is going. Doses administered per capita, the number of percent of people who have got at least one dose, the number of people who have gotten two. I mean, there are all kinds of ways to look at it. But bottom line, we were at the bottom of the rankings for the entire country just a couple weeks ago. We're now kind of middle of the pack, depending on which metric you look at. Now, DHS has argued that's because the reporting from the CDC is lag behind our state numbers, and it's just reflecting more accurately what's happening here. But let's be honest, there's been some problems with the rollout from the Eaters administration with this vaccine. Whether they're doing a better job of it, whether it's being more accurately reported, it's a sigh of relief for them that we're not bottom of the pack anymore. The challenge is to make sure we don't slide back down. And two, there are a couple of pitfalls ahead. We talked about, you know, vaccinating prisoners, for example, in this next batch starting March 1st. Also, there's an advisory commission that helps recommend what groups should be included in the next phase of the rollout. They hit a pause, quote unquote, in their activities. Now, you can understand why. We have a supply problem, not just here, but across the country. Unless there's supply, adding more people doesn't really help because you're putting more people in line for a limited supply of vaccine. But the message it sends is kind of an odd one right now when people still are kind of unsure when they're going to get their vaccine and kind of want some certainty. So there's that. And Republicans feel like, yeah, it's getting better, but it took pressure on the Evers administration to get things in a better spot. And insiders kind of are giving some praise to Evers for bringing in Karen Timberlake. She used to work under Jim Doyle in his administration. She's now the interim DHS secretary, replacing Andrea Palm. She's kind of a well-known quantity in the Capitol. She's worked here before, so they think that she might be a good influence in that agency in terms of keeping things on track or getting back on a better track going forward.
Yeah, and it's all about the number of vaccine doses releases to Wisconsin in the future. Okay, new subject. JR, you and I have covered, let's be kind, a few budgets. In the days before governors of both sides, D's and R's, announce their budget, they roll out specific issues that they're going to talk about. So let's look at what Governor Evers said. He made two announcements. The following are going to be in my budget, which I'll give to the legislature Tuesday, February 16th. Let's talk about what he said. He wants the reforms to lower prescription drug prices and control costs, allow the importing of drugs, a prescription drug purchasing entity, allowing state and local governments to leverage for lower prices, $50 copay cap on insulin required by diabetics, new consumer protections. He also said today, I'm going to include $43 million for the ag industry, including $20 million to help food banks, food pantries connect with farmers. JR, we're going to see a few more almost daily announcements of what's in the governor's budget over the next few days, right?
Yeah, I mean, they always kind of dribble out some teasers. The big questions kind of facing the governor are, you know, how much are you going to put in education? He is an education governor. He's a former state superintendent. That is one of his big priorities. DPI requested $1.6 billion in new spending. Now, the good news of the latest revenue projections are we actually have enough money projected to come in over through the next 2.5 years that we could pay for everything the agencies requested without really too much of an issue. That's not going to happen. You and I both know that. But how much will Evers put into public instruction? How much the university get? Will it be a tax cut? If so, how large? We've seen a couple of proposals floating already. There is a bill that passed out of a committee yesterday that would address a looming tax hit for businesses over using those federal PPP loans. There's a way that they're used that they might get taxed on that unless the law is changed to match federal statute. There's a bill that passed out of committee unanimously yesterday also that would collapse one of our tax brackets, one of the lowest ones, right, and raise how much income is now taxed at the lowest rate we have in Wisconsin. So there's money to play with. So the big things, again, they're always big things: education, Medicaid, prisons, university, taxes. Those are the things really kind of watch. What are Evers' priorities? Because remember, this budget queues up his reelection. This right. is the biggest document he's going to get passed the legislature. And can he get anything in there that he wants, like the Medicaid expansion, to accept more federal money through the Affordable Care Act to cover more people in Wisconsin through that program?
Right. Okay. Now let's talk about the marker, though, that was thrown down by the two new co-chairs of the Joint Finance Committee, State Senator Howard Markline, State Representative Mark Bourne. They said families and employers across the state have been struggling under the weight of government shutdowns and the COVID-19 pandemic for nearly a year. Governor Evers, hear us. Do not send the legislature another budget full of tax increases, excessive spending, and divisive non-fiscal policy. Just quickly, JR, what's a message from Senator Markline, Representative Bourne?
Well, remember that policy is in the eye of the beholder. So what's one person's policy is not another's. So keep that in mind. But, you know, look, they want a budget that sticks to what they did 2 years ago. Remember, they stripped out a whole host of Evers' priorities before they even took their first real action, the budget, in that process in 2019. You can expect if he includes some of the same things he did 2 years ago, like, for example, policies on marijuana, they will take those out again. The question becomes, how much will they give him of what he wants? And does what they produce enough for Evers to sign it, or do we see an actual budget veto where he can't, in his mind, he can't do enough partial vetoes to change it to his liking that vetoes the entire thing? Don't forget, with all the revenue we have coming in, there's not really pressure to do a budget. Now, granted, every October, there's pressure because schools want to know how much money they're going to get. But it's not like we face a real true deficit in Wisconsin or there's money's going to dry up. And we're not the federal government where if you don't pass a budget, things shut down. I've already heard the theory that, yeah, you get pressure every October because of schools. A lot of schools aren't teaching in person right now. And there are Republicans who are kind of chafing the idea of putting a lot more money into schools when people haven't felt like, in some districts, they're getting a good deal in their tax dollar right now for what their kids are getting. Obviously, we're in a pandemic. There are a lot of reasons why. But expect to hear that argument about education funding going forward from Republicans of, well, what's appropriate? It's an experience we've had for the last year in Wisconsin with a mix of virtual learning, hybrid learning, and some districts in person because of the pandemic.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, JR, there was a 5 or 6 hour meeting of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. I want to pinpoint on one thing that they did an audit. First of all, the whole backdrop debate nationally about the accuracy of Dominion machines in the presidential elections. The elections commissioner said that's not an issue, but when we audited, let me get the number right, 2 of 28 Dominion voting machines in Wisconsin, we found potential problems with the write-in process, not presidential elections that we'll get into later. Dominion machines, I checked, are used by 274 of Wisconsin's 1,800 and local clerks that run elections. The problem, as it was brought to the commission from their staff, is that these Dominion machines may read folds or creases as write-in ballots. the commission unanimously, and it's rare for that commission to vote for anything unanimously, recommended updates for the April 6th election. And again, they said this is a problem, a potential problem with write-ins. And so let's listen to the exchange. Republican appointee Spindell said, well, Dominion may have problems nationally. He's corrected by the chair and Jacobs, but let's listen to the back and forth, please.
We're talking about one ballot out of 500,000, and we got two machines out of 28, which is 7.1%. You know, there's, and it appears that this same problem has not happened with other brands, at least that we do. We also know, and I don't know whether it's justifiable or not, that Dominion has had some problems, or at least alleged problems, throughout the country. So,
Bob, that's just not true. There have been problems with Dominion voting machines anywhere in the country. That is a lie. They have not been anywhere in the country. We've had audits and recounts and recounts.
We always read
the fact that people think it is because you keep saying it.
This in no way has anything to do with the allegations that have been made that somehow the Dominion machines flipped votes, that it was possible to hack into them. There's a whole slew of allegations, and I speak only for Wisconsin. I think these allegations are unsupported by any evidence at all, anywhere, that that kind of thing happened with Dominion machines. Now, here we are talking about a very different kind of a thing. And this is the kind of thing that in this case, it deals with the write-in line. It affects both parties, all candidates equally. It doesn't have anything to do with all those other allegations. That's pure coincidence that we're here spending this much time on a Dominion issue today. And I think people need to be very clear about that.
Okay, JR, time's running a little short, but any PS on this Elections Commission debate over Dominion machines?
Anytime you bring up Dominion, you're going to feed into people who think there's something amiss about the November 3rd election. Just keep in mind there were more than a dozen counties in Wisconsin that solely used Dominion machines. President Trump did better in those counties in 2020 than he did in 2016. If they're truly a conspiracy to use Dominion machines to undercut President Trump, you would think that would not be the case. So just please keep that in mind.
Very good perspective. Okay, the good news story of the week, the badger that, JR, have you rubbed its nose? I have. Outside the governor's office?
Good question. I don't know.
Come
maybe.
On.
Maybe not.
I've rubbed its nose. My grandchildren. Anyway, the Naval Academy said, you guys have had this badger outside the governor's East Wing office since 1989. They said this last year. We'd kind of like to have it back. It's very popular. Tour guides tell students rub their nose for good luck, whether or not that happened. Well, anyway. But the Naval Academy, as I said, asked that it be returned. Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher from the 8th District spoke to the Naval Academy, and they've agreed to not seek the return of the badger for 2 years. That's the good news story of the day. So that leads directly into your stocks, sir.
So rising Jill Underley, she's one of seven candidates for state superintendent. Look, WEAC is not the 800-pound gorilla in Wisconsin policy it used to be. Act 10 a decade ago now really kind of cut off its revenue supply from union dues. That said, we're looking at maybe 360,000 people voting in the February primary. Whatever the numbers are left WEAC has for members, that member-to-member communication can help turn those folks out for a vote. That should help Underley get in the primary. Also watch Sheila Briggs, assistant superintendent at DPI right now.
Yep.
Deb Kerr is kind of seen as the Republican / school choice candidate. Those are three I'm hearing the most about. But it's a seven-person race. It's wide open. It's hard to know what's going to happen. But again, that WEAC endorsement is a good thing for Underley, even though it's not a guarantee she'll get through the primary in another week and a half.
We're almost into overtime, so quickly, give me your mixed.
Tom Nelson, he had a good, maybe even pretty good fundraising number for the last month and a half, 2 months of the year at U.S. Senate race. He didn't, though, blow anybody's doors off. And that's the thing. He got in to try and get attention and capture anti-Ron Johnson sentiment, but he also didn't really put a number up there. It's going to scare off Sarah Galuski or Alex Lazary or Mandela Barnes, or, you know, go down your list of potential Democrats who might run for U.S. Senate. So good, but also not dominating. That's going to really put him in a position where he's now all of a sudden a front runner to take on Ron Johnson in 2 years, if Johnson runs again.
And falling.
Jim Steinke, Up North News, it's a liberal outlet, got a hold of an email in which Steinke wrote that leading the Speaker's Task Force on racial disparities would be a political loser, quote unquote. Look, he may have been being honest in that email, but it just kind of feeds into the distrust Democrats have about what the true intentions are of that body, and it's just kind of created a little bit of a churn in the Capitol. And I've heard some Republicans tell me that as they've watched this blowback Steinke's received, they wonder if this is going to set a bad precedent for future olive branches for Republicans. And two, when it comes to these policies, racial disparities or police reforms, are Republicans going to be motivated to work on them if this is the reaction they get when they're trying? Because Steinke is trying to do something if people feel like this is how it's going to end up.
So much news, so little time. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for February 5.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.